A Warning to the Curious by M.R. James, narrated by Peter Coates. The place on the East Coast which the reader is asked to consider is Seaburg. It's not very different now from what I remember it to have been when I was a child. Marshes intersected by dikes to the south, recalling the early chapters of Great Expectations. Flat fields to the north, merging into heath. Heath, fir woods, and above all, gorse inland. A long seafront and a street. Behind that, a spacious church of flint with a broad, solid western tower and a peal of six bells. How well I remember their sound on a hot Sunday in August as our party went slowly up the white, dusty slope of road towards them. For the church stands at the top of a short, steep incline. They rang with a flat, clacking sort of sound on those hot days, but when the air was softer, they were mellower too. The railway ran down to its little terminus farther along the same road. There was a gay white windmill just before you came to the station, and another down near the shingle at the south end of the town, and yet others on higher ground to the north. There were cottages of bright red brick with slate roofs. But why do I encumber you with these commonplace details? The fact is that they come crowding to the point of the pencil when it begins to write of Seaburg. I should like to be sure that I had allowed the right ones to get onto the paper, but I forgot. I have not quite done with the word painting business yet. Walk away from the sea and the town, past the station, and turn up the road on the right. It is a sandy road, parallel with the railway, and if you follow it, it climbs to somewhat higher ground. On your left, you are now going northward, is heath. On your right, the side towards the sea, is a belt of old firs, wind-beaten, thick at the top, with the slope that old seaside trees have. Seen from the skyline from the train, they would tell you in an instant, if you did not know it, that you were approaching a windy coast. Well, at the top of my little hill, a line of these firs strikes out and runs towards the sea, for there is a ridge that goes that way, and the ridge ends in a rather well-defined mound commanding the level fields of rough grass, and a little knot of fir trees crowns it. And here you may sit on a hot spring day, very well content to look at the blue sea, white windmills, red cottages, bright green grass, church tower, and distant Martello Tower on the south. As I have said, I began to know Seaburg as a child, but a gap of a good many years separates my early knowledge from that which is more recent. Still, it keeps its place in my affections, and any tales of it that I pick up have an interest for me. One such tale is this. It came to me in a place very remote from Seaburg, and quite accidentally, from a man whom I had been able to oblige, enough in his opinion to justify his making me his confidant to this extent. "I know all that country, more or less," he said. "I used to go to Seaburg pretty regularly for golf in the spring. I generally put up at the Bear with a friend. Henry Long it was. You knew him, perhaps?" "Slightly," I said. "And we used to take a sitting room and be very happy there. Since he died, I haven't cared to go there, and I don't know that I should anyhow, after the particular thing that happened on our last visit. It was in April 1900 and something we were there, and by some chance we were almost the only people in the hotel. So the ordinary public rooms were practically empty, and we were the more surprised when, after dinner, our sitting room door opened, and a young man put his head in. We were aware of this young man. He was a rather rabbity, anemic subject, light hair and light eyes, but not unpleasing. So when he said, 'I beg your pardon, is this a private room?' we did not growl and say, 'Yes, it is,' but Long said, or I did, no matter which, 'Please come in.' 'Oh, may I?' he said, and seemed relieved. Of course, it was obvious that he wanted company, and as he was a reasonable kind of person, not the sort to bestow his whole family history on you, we urged him to make himself at home. 'I dare say you find the other rooms rather bleak,' I said. 'Yes, he did, but it was really too good of us,' and so on. That being got over, he made some pretense of reading a book. Long was playing Patience, I was writing. It became plain to me after a few minutes that this visitor of ours was in rather a state of fidgets, or nerves, which communicated itself to me, and so I put away my writing and turned to engaging him in talk. After some remarks, which I forget, he became rather confidential. 'You'll think it very odd of me,' this was the sort of way he began.